Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Time for the best baseball show you're ever going to find on the radio.
Ballpoint, ball net, net, ball net, done.
Rob Bradford of WEEI.com and Steve Peralt of the Section 10 podcast are making the greatest game great again, 2 hours at a time.
We have some pillows. We have some pillows on the dirt.
No football, no basketball, no hockey. Just the most entertaining baseball talk you've ever experienced. It's the live BP baseball show.
If you hit a man with a ball, then he may run to the pillows.
With Bradford and Peralt on EEI.
Live BP baseball show. My name is Steve Peralt. Rob Bradford taking a brief break right now. But we are joined today by former Red Sox pitcher, a near and dear friend of mine. Pat Light is calling into the show. Pat, how are you today? How you doing, my man?
Yeah, Steve, I was having a great day, and now that I'm on the phone with you, it's even better.
That's what I was hoping for. That was the goal. But yeah, Pat, we're looking at this team. I know we've talked in the first hour of the program, the live BP show, about how crazy it was that they got swept by the Baltimore Orioles to start the season. Then we had to do a show about it right after, and obviously you're going to be negative. That's something that I'm going to hammer home today. Is because I'm sure you get people in the mentions too. We normally tweet very positively about the Boston Red Sox, but I'm sure there's people in the mentions that are like, oh, you were down on them when they lost 3 games to the Orioles. Yeah, obviously. They got swept by the Baltimore Orioles to start the season. Of course you're going to be down on them. If we weren't down on them then what are we even doing as, you know, followers of the team, right?
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that was as bad of a start as you could imagine as for a Red Sox player coming against a team that is, you know, everyone is saying he's going to finish last in the AL East. You had a great spring training, a very promising spring training, especially after a tough last year. You wanted them to come off and start the year hot. We thought it was great that we're starting the year with the worst team in the AL East, so we can get off to a hot start. And to go drop all 3 games to them, it was demoralizing, to say the least.
Yeah, and obviously being back at Fenway Park was fun. Got to go to opening day. That was cool. Like, my favorite part was just, like, tweeting about my sneakers. That was really the highlight because they didn't score a run in the opener. And then Sunday, obviously, Garrett Richards gets destroyed. He's going to be on the bump tonight in Baltimore. A lot of eyes on Garrett Richards tonight coming off of that tough debut. What do you expect from Richards this evening? And I wish I heard the audio. I don't know, Bridget, if at some point in the show, if we can find his post-game audio from the first start, because apparently he was making up every excuse in the book as to why he gave up 6 earned runs in 2 innings. But what do you think of that debut and how he could bounce back tonight?
You know, I picked him for a guy that was, you know, was very important to this year's team success. You know, he's a guy that's going to be in the middle of the rotation for us for the year. He's going to bridge these gaps as far as, you know, getting to some of the younger guys in the back end of the rotation, getting Chris Sale back hopefully at the end of the year, especially early on in that first 3-game series, Eddie Rodriguez being out. You know, we needed him to kind of step up a little bit. He didn't do so. And the thing that I didn't like the most was the inconsistency. There was no, he seemed to say that he thought that his delivery was good, everything felt okay. The delivery to me, what I was watching, was an inconsistent one that wasn't going to be able to duplicate and be able to get your fastball in position you want it to be in. it kind of looked, you know, hectic out there, and it never seemed like he was in control of the baseball. And I hope to see a different Garrett Richards tonight. But, you know, he needs to clean up a few things, I think, in order to be consistent throughout a game.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. Live BP show, Steve Peralt, Pat Light joins us. Pat, question for you off of the Richards take here is that when you're a guy, especially in this rotation, right, the Red Sox rotation has surprisingly been very good, and we didn't really expect that going into the season. Now, obviously, it's a seven-game sample size. I understand that's a very small size, but Richards is the only guy that's gotten rocked. Everyone else has basically gone 5-6 innings, three earned or less. When you're that guy on the rotation, I'm not saying you specifically from experience. You've been on plenty of teams over the course of your career. You were on plenty of teams. You dominated for the. That's another thing people need to factor in. It's like Pat Light pitched in Major League Baseball. Like you got to the pinnacle of the sport. You've been the ace on staffs. What is it like when there's a guy that's underperforming amongst the other pitchers? Like, what is that vibe like when it's like everyone kind of knows there's one guy on this staff that's not holding his own? What is that vibe like?
Well, you know, especially this early in the season, it doesn't really change the vibe or the culture between the staff itself. You know, the staff itself really wants everyone to be successful and to bring everyone up. So a team that has some veterans in Evaldi and Eddie Rodriguez, they'll be able to help Richards a little bit along the way. And a guy who, if I was going to pick anyone, minus, you know, Evaldi and Eddie, to struggle early on, I would have picked him because he's a guy who's been around for a while. He's not going to take one start to heart. He's not going to think he's getting sent down to AAA after a bad start. He's a guy that can handle this and come out the other side and not be a guy who's going to, you know, be a little tentative out there on the mound anymore. So it's not going to demoralize the staff itself, especially this early in the season. But I think, Garrett, as the year goes on, if he continues to struggle, obviously, he'll feel like all eyes are on him, which could be difficult.
Especially Tanner Houck. Tanner Houck mm-hmm. is waiting. That's one thing that I'm very much paying close attention to, is the progress of Houck, not just with the Woo Sox, but just what he was able to do while he was up here. He gave up a run, but that run doesn't even count in extra innings. I did want your opinion, Pat, on the extra innings rule with the runner starting at second. I know we had talked about it in Section 10 this week about how we barely even noticed it last year because the team was that bad that we barely even noticed that the extra innings rule was in effect last season. A lot of things were missed last season considering how funky it was. But what are your thoughts after the Red Sox have, won that walk-off, had to come back in that game three different times, twice in extra innings? The Yankees, very unfortunately, I don't know if you saw the score again today, they lost again today. Very sad for all the Yankee fans out there. But they dropped a game to the Orioles in extras. What are your thoughts on the setup? Because I have several, but I'm curious of yours.
You know, I have several too, Steve. I think, the last year, it was kind of, for lack of a better word, kind of circus of the year.
Yeah.
It was, all over the place. That's why that rule of the guys on second base in extra innings, I was like, all right, whatever, throw them out there. But I'm also a baseball purist. I understand the game needs to develop and it needs to grow in order to keep the fan base continuously growing. But it seems to me, if I'm a pitcher out there, and I was a relief guy in the big league, so if I come into a game there and a guy's already on second, I understand that guy's an unearned run, but it feels like that guy didn't earn his place on second base.
Exactly. And that's sorry to cut you off, but like that's one of my points too, where it's like, yes, everyone loves to pitch it as, oh, no, don't worry, guys, that run doesn't count. Yeah, but now I'm on the mound and I'm in a crunch situation because of a guy being automatically put on a base. That's weird, right?
Yes, it's really weird. To me, it's a beer league softball rule.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be in play. It's just, I understand you're trying to get, you don't want games to go to 20 innings. I understand even in the back end of things, if you look from a personnel standpoint, having 15, 17 inning games, there's kind of chaos behind the scenes that people don't really know about with how many pitchers do you need to call up? Is there a doubleheader next day, God forbid, because now you need even more pitchers to come up, maybe even some backup hitting. It's kind of a nightmare when those types of games happen. But, this is Major League Baseball. This is what we do. This is what professionals do. I need guys to earn their spot on base, not just be handed it to them because the game's taking too long.
Yeah, this is one of those opinions I have where it's really kind of on both sides a little bit, which is a little cheap. I know we're supposed to be very aggressive towards like, no, this is why it's great. This is why it stinks. But every half inning, I kind of forget that the rule is in place. Like, basically, every time the inning starts, I'm like, oh, right, there is a guy that starts on second base. I totally forgot about that. And so as a fan, it kind of brings you right back into the edge of your seat, which I think that's what Major League Baseball wants. But if I'm a pitcher, I hate this. Like, I wouldn't want to come into any inning. A lot of these guys hate coming into a non-clean inning as it is. Forget extra innings. Ottavino, go down the list. Matty Backpacks probably doesn't love coming in at the end of the eighth to then pitch in the ninth as well. I think a lot of these guys, and they might not be overly outspoken about it because I'm sure this rule is here to stay. I don't think they're going to go back to what it was before. But a lot of these pitchers, I'm sure, hate it. And I get what they're saying. I understand their point of view. But as a fan, especially after the Red Sox won, you have the J.D. walk-off. Devers had a much-needed RBI single there to get him going, and now he's cooking in Baltimore. I kind of like it. I'm not going to lie. I kind of like the immediacy of action, because if you don't have that, and I know I'm not the first person to say this, but if you don't have that, it's basically just a solo home run derby. You know, whoever can run into one, and then you win by, you know, a run. So the alternative's not great, right? Like, what we were doing before wasn't entertaining.
No, it depends how you look at it as far as entertainment is concerned. But I will say, the opinion I just gave you is the player's opinion. That's the player's perspective. That is what we want as players. Even ex-players watching the game, you know, you feel bad. You know, a guy like Matty Backpacks. You know, I played with Matt. I came up to the minor leagues with Matt. Like, I don't want to see him out there with a man on second base in a big game, you know, facing the 3-4 hole hitters. Like, that's tough. But from a fan's perspective, I completely understand. Like, even when I watched that game the other night when we went to extras with the Rays, you know, when I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, we got a guy in second base. I forgot about that. Like, it is kind of exciting. So I get it from the fan's perspective. And at the end of the day, as much as us players whine, we're paid to entertain the fans. So if this is what the fans want, this is what the fans get.
I liked what Alex Cora said after the game too. And I think it's the right way to look at it. He said that the guy on second base doesn't matter. Like, we don't care about that. We don't have Tanner Houck come in to be like, you got to make sure he doesn't score. They care about the guy that's at the plate, making sure that he doesn't come around to score or that he doesn't run into one. And all of a sudden you're down two runs in the 10th. I fully agree with that, because with the Red Sox lineup, there is no excuse for not getting a guy in from second with no outs with the extra innings rule as it is right now. So Cora understands that aspect of it. He also understands, I know the Red Sox bullpen is, you know, kind of overperformed to this point, but he understands that these guys are going to be in tough situations, likely in extra innings, and he doesn't want to put the pressure on them that you got to hold them scoreless here. So I totally understand from that perspective. But Pat, I do want to ask you, what are the two things that you've been most impressed with so far with this team? And then the two things, let me flip it on you, that you've been most disappointed. See what I just did there? It's a little two and two. So two things you've been most impressed with, two things that have been the biggest letdown for you with the Red Sox 7 games into the season.
Well, I think two things that I've been the most impressed with, the two main things. One is the starting rotation, with the exception of Richards. You know, Pavetta coming out, doing what he's doing, looking like a veteran out on that mound, throwing the ball really well. Tanner Houck, now, even though he's not on this team anymore right now, you know, that guy's going to be very integral to the year. And seeing what he's been able to do so far has been great. We got Eddie Rodriguez coming back. We got, you know, Nathan Eovaldi throwing the ball well. This staff, I know, me and you had talked throughout the offseason about, you know, we were tentatively excited about this staff, but not really knowing what to get out of them. So far, it's exciting to watch. The other thing, and this is probably even more so, probably the most thing I'm most excited about, is that bounce back series against the Rays.
Yes.
What I saw there, when you see a team that really got dominated the entire weekend against a Baltimore Orioles team that is not supposed to be in any type of competition this year, got dominated. And great teams that are actually able to compete for wild card and AL East championships and then into the playoffs, are the teams that, you know, throw that away and come immediately back. 2020 Red Sox probably get swept by the Rays too and get it taken to them. The 2021 Red Sox, they had a very different approach, and they come out against a better Rays team and not only have two really great wins bookend there, but in that middle, you're fighting with a really, really good Rays team that was in the World Series last year. Obviously, they don't have Blake Snell again, but you know, you're fighting with a team now. You're not just laying down and letting them beat you because they were winning throughout that game. You come back and you beat them in extra innings. This is a team that looks a lot better than I thought they would look, especially this early in the season. This looks like a veteran club that can compete with pretty much anyone in Major League Baseball. So I'm happy to see that. The two things I'd probably be the most disappointed in, and to counter that, honestly, is that first start to the Orioles. I did not expect that. I think
my goodness, that was terrible.
What we saw. Oh, my goodness, Steve. You know, when you watch this spring training team, you get excited about Kike Hernandez, you get excited about Dalbec, you get excited about all these guys. You're like, damn, maybe we are going to be really good this year. And then they come out and get just really, really let down of a start there. It was disappointing to watch. And that's something, again, it was quickly corrected by Alex Cora and the staff there. But it was not something that I thought what this team would do coming out of such an exciting spring training. It's not something I thought this team would do. I guess in the last part, the second thing I'd probably be I would say is disappointing is really just the Tanner House not on this club right now.
I know. I know.
I loved him when he was up there. I want to see him up there. And I know, Steve, you and I have been around the game for a long time. We know he's going to be a part of this club in the near future. It's just, I wish he was up there right now. I'd really like to see him throw some more innings with us.
I know you pitched in Major League Baseball. I was an all-star in Little League. So we both know, as former successful pitchers, what to see in a fellow successful pitcher. And Tanner Houck, it's such a unique scenario because you can't tell me that he shouldn't be in this rotation. Like, there's no, like, Cora, Haim, you can't look at me with a straight face and be like, no, he should be in Worcester and he's not good enough to be in this rotation. So that's kind of what kills me personally. I understand that you have a full roster right now. I understand that the starting rotation boat is full. I get it. But I'm not against a six-man rotation. I don't know if the rest of the guys would buy into that. And Haim has gone out of his way to say, now listen, this is the plan. The plan is to have more pitchers than they have spots for. I understand that. But when you have a guy like Tanner Houck, who is really, and forget spring training, I understand he was probably pushing a little too hard in spring training, trying to do a little too much. He had like a 5 or 6 ERA. I get that. When the lights are the brightest so far, Tanner Houck has been dominant, and he has performed at a very high level. He doesn't seem to be rattled by the moment. That slider is filthy. And I don't have any doubts at all. Everyone loves chiming in with the, oh, he's got to develop a third pitch, this, that, the other thing. You know, and I'm sure you see this, Pat, when fans will be in your mentions, just kind of quoting what they heard in an article or something. Like, do you really believe that? Do you really think he has to be in Worcester developing a third pitch with how filthy he is with his current pitches? Because I don't.
No, he doesn't have to be in Worcester. The thing is, what's happening right now is he's going to be a product of one of the guys that has the ability to move back and forth. We're not going to do a six-man rotation because the top of our rotation is too good. We need Eddie Rodriguez. We need Nathan Eovaldi throwing as many times as we can throughout the year. We throw a six-man rotation in, we see them less, and we need to see them as much as we can. He's successful at the big league level. If he wasn't successful because the lack of a third or a fourth pitch, then yes, we need to send him to Worcester. We need to get him ready, and we need to get those pitches ready so that he can be successful at the big league level. He's already successful at the big league level, so he doesn't need to be down there to do so. He's just a product of a guy who has the ability to go down there right now, and I think that will change over time as the Red Sox need him more and more.
My last point here, we are up against it with the break. My last point, Pat Light, former Boston Red Sox pitcher, now podcast extraordinaire. Great follow on Twitter. Had a couple of random exchanges this week, Pat, did you, on Twitter. One including Dave Portnoy. I don't think he had a direct Twitter back and forth with Dave Portnoy. But that was, I saw that TikTok and I was like, all it's going to take is one bum to blow this one up, and is what it is. But my last thing here is on Bobby Dalbec. And we hyped Bobby up so much before the season started, and I was getting a little worried. Bobby, a friend of the program, friend of this program, friend of Section 10, I was a little worried we were hyping him up too much, and I don't want to say we were doing that quite yet. Again, we're 7 games into the season. You don't want to get too ahead of yourself here, but what are your thoughts on the Bobby Dalbec start? He has 2 hits on the season, hitting 111 with a 158 OBP, a 269 OPS. Obviously, no extra base hits, no RBIs, no home runs, none of the fun stuff. A lot of strikeouts.
Bobby Dalbec, a lot of hype heading into the season. What are your thoughts on him so far?
Listen, he's off to a slow start. I'm not all that concerned. I remember back in the day when they were really hyping up Jackie Bradley Jr. out of spring training before he really got to shine in the big leagues. And Jackie never really got the bat going in his big league career, but he's a good player. Bobby Dalbec, obviously, we're expecting more at the plate than we did from Jackie Bradley, but he'll be fine. This is early on. He's a young guy. What he's doing now is he's seeing all big leaguers. He's not seeing some of the guys you might see in spring training who are getting, little spots here and there that aren't going to be competitive at the big league level or not going to be at the big league level this year. He's seen all these guys, and all these guys now are playing in not mid season, but they're playing for something now. There's no more spring training. There's no more working on a cutter. There's no more any of that stuff. So he's seeing better pitching. He'll adjust, and that's what keeps big leaguers. He'll adjust. He'll figure out a way. I have a lot of faith in Tim Hires as one of the hitting coaches. I have a lot of faith in Alex Cora. I have a lot of faith in the system to make sure that he's in the right position to succeed. I'm not worried at all.
Pat Light, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Your parting take. I'm giving everyone a little time for their parting take. What is your parting take as we head into a 7 o'clock first pitch in Baltimore? Red Sox 4-3, looking for their fifth straight win tonight.
Listen, I don't have a parting take for you, Steven, but I'm very happy to have the Sox on today. It's, yesterday.
That was tough last night.
I was tweeting, I was so excited about the pour some dollar beers at my bar in Hoboken and watch the Red Sox play. And I mean, how long do we have Friday night off? So I was very frustrated to see that. However, like I said, Yankee fans seem to be some of the most uneducated fans in the baseball because they feel like they're the Los Angeles Dodgers when they're a good team, but they're not what they think they are. And the Rays are taking it to them now. It's a beautiful thing to have a Yankee loss early on and us to go play Baltimore Orioles tonight and take it to them again.
I'm excited for the evening. Pat, I don't even blame you for the tweet when you're saying, like, I'm going to be at my bar tonight and the Sox are going to be on, because that should be every Friday. Every Friday night they should be on. There should be no Friday off days. What was that all about? That was terrible.
That's horrible, Steve. I can't believe it.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, Patrick, thank you very much for joining us. We will do this, obviously, throughout the season. And, hopefully the Sox get a win tonight. 5 in a row would be nice.
Listen, I'm looking forward to it.
Pat Light, former Red Sox pitcher, joining us here on the Live BP Show. We are taking your calls, 617-779-7937. Plenty of Red Sox talk, a little baseball talk. Going to get into Trevor Bauer, that loser. We're going to talk about him coming up here on WEEI and the Live BP Show coming up next.
Serving New England for nearly 30 years. Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
You want to freestyle a trend or you want me to handle it? All right, I got it, Steve.
Bridget's got trending.
Trending now on WEI and WEI.com. The Celtics beat the Timberwolves in overtime 145-136. Jason Tatum scored a career-high 53 points in the win. They begin their West Coast road trip tomorrow. Tip-off against the Nuggets at 3 p.m. Jeremy Swayman got his first loss of the season. He was in net for his third straight start against the Flyers. Final score, 3-2 Philadelphia.
Brutal.
UMass Hockey takes on St. Cloud State in the NCAA.
That sounds like a made-up school, by the way.
St. Cloud State, yeah. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Is it like only hockey? That's probably an only hockey school.
Pretty much. I don't know what else they could be good at, but they're in the middle of Minnesota, so okay. Probably just the
that
hockey.
That makes sense, yeah.
So they take on St. Cloud State in the championship game tonight at 7. No matter who wins, it will be the first title in school history for them. Gonna plug UMass because that's where I went to school. I used to be a play-by-play broadcaster there for the hockey team.
Really?
So I have a vested interest in this. I wish they were this good when I was there.
I was gonna say I very much enjoyed going to UMass every now and again. What a great school. Like I had a couple buddies there. Great place to visit. I don't know how you survive going 4 years at UMass.
Yeah.
Some of those weekends. My goodness. Big night tonight. Big night tonight.
So
for
huge
UMass.
Night. I'm gonna hurry home and watch that.
Yes.
I got an update on the Masters leaderboard right now.
It
is still Justin Rose in first. He's 7 back and seven under.
Yeah, I was gonna say if he's leading and he's 7 back, that would be
seven
crazy.
Here's something you need to know. I have no clue anything about golf. So
Justin Rose is dominant, so the fact that he's leading makes sense.
Here's your Masters board update from me, who is just winging it. Jordan Spieth has fallen back. He's tied for sixth place, so he didn't have the best day either. And finally, the Red Sox coming up next after this pregame Starts at 6 o'clock, and we'll get the first pitch at 7:05 right here on WEI. That's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com.
Time now for the live BP Baseball Show.
Ball point, ball net, net, ball net, done.
With Rob Bradford and Steve Peralt.
Throw a ball to the stick man.
More baseball talk now.
We have some pillows. We have some pillows on the dirt.
Bradford and Peralt on WEI.
Back live BP show, another great interview with Pat Light.
I don't even want to say interview, a conversation. Just two guys
talking
around,
baseball,
sitting around the campfire talking some ball.
Absolutely. No, Pat's the best. I think every time we have him on, he'll bring that edge that of a guy that's played in the bigs, you know, a guy that's been there and done that. Now what he did in the bigs wasn't necessarily overly impressive. But his presence there, Rob, is what mattered, and what he saw over the course of his career is what mattered. And I liked his points today. They were very good.
I caught the second half of it, but I don't know if you broached what my breaking news, if you talked about his aspiring career as a broadcaster in the broadcast booth.
I should have brought – see, that's the thing. That's why I need to become a radio veteran and not a rookie, because that would have been a perfect transition.
It's all about the behind-the-scenes media goings-on. But, yeah, I mean, yeah. As someone who knows – that broadcast booth back and forwards like you do.
Yes.
I mean, so he would be excellent. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be with the Red Sox. I don't know what his long-term goals are, but I am going to say right now that he would be excellent as a broadcaster.
I think he would fit well. I mean, per anything, it would take time to get used to, especially you've done those games, 9-inning game, especially the one last week. My goodness, the one last Sunday with Will and Joe, it's like the Sox are down, what, 10-0 in the second or the third, and you now have to fill the next 6 innings with what? But I thought they did a great job, and again, we've mentioned it before in this program, Red Sox 4-0 since the last time we did a live BP show. Also undefeated during the live BP 60 segments.
Live BP
that are on the pregame show.
60 segments, yep. At the beginning of every series on the pregame show, the aforementioned pregame show, which we, live BP, is taking over at starting about 6:05. Will Fleming's going to be joining us, a cast of all-stars, which basically is you, me, and Will Fleming.
That's a good cast. I like that cast.
Alex Cora, I don't know if you know this, but Alex Cora, we have him on every single day.
Yes.
And we'll have him right off the top, right out of the gate, the pregame show.
I'm very excited to give my thoughts off of that. You know that. I'm pumped to give my thoughts on Cora's thoughts. Thoughts on thoughts. Can't
what
wait.
What was your – okay, so that said, before we go back to the call, Tim and Walpole, hold on. I would be remiss if asking you if you could give us, please, 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 your reflection of your interview with Pat, or your conversation with Pat Light.
Yeah, I thought what Pat brought up was a lot of stuff that we've kind of mentioned on this show. He was kind of echoing one of the main points being it's okay to rip the Red Sox after they started 0-3 against the Orioles. That team stinks.
It's okay.
It's okay. It's not like, oh my God, since they won 4 since then, we're idiots for calling them out for losing 3 games. No, both those things can exist. They can lose 3. We say they stink. They win 4. We say, hey, they're not that bad. Like, that's fine. Those things can happen. The main thing that he pointed out that I liked was the pitcher's perspective with the new extra innings rule. And he hates it from a pitcher's perspective. And he knows that if this rule existed when he was pitching, that he would despise it. And I think that's fair to hear from a former Red Sox pitcher, because I think a lot of these guys from the bullpen, these guys coming in from the pen, probably have the same thoughts that this rule kind of stinks. Because, yes, you can throw out whatever you want to about that guy's not an earned run, the guy on second doesn't count. But I'm coming into the game a clean inning you can't even call it a clean inning, right? Because it's like, yes, it's a clean inning technically, but I have a runner in scoring position already. So I understand from a pitcher's perspective that you can try to pitch me all you want on how that run doesn't count towards my ERA. I have to completely change how I pitch based off of this rule. Now, I say all that to say I enjoy the extra innings rule, but I liked hearing from a pitcher's perspective.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, it's a great perspective, but this is the ultimate take one for the team if you're a pitcher. And
you have
they don't
to. You don't really have a choice.
No, they don't want to take – and when I say take one for the team, I mean take one for the great game of baseball.
Yeah.
Because because we had, when we were doing the season preview show with Mutt, and Carl Ravitch came on, and he had the line I thought
I didn't
was
know
just,
Ravitch was coming. I love Carl Ravitch. I've always wanted to talk to him. Let's get him on here at some point.
We absolutely, listen, local guy, Needham High, went through his basketball career. It was great.
Yeah.
But he had one line which just, to me, just said it all, which was, the game needs more urgency. And we can talk about time of game, we can talk about pace of game, but that was it right there. Urgency. And what does this rule do? It supplies urgency. Am I wrong?
It what it did, Rob, I agree with that, but what it did to me is it gives it like this little playoff feel during the regular season. Because during the postseason, there are a million moments like that where you're on the edge of your seat because you know how much it matters to the overall result of that series. Now, when this happens during the regular season, yes, 162 games, I get all of that. But I like re-remembered every half inning that there was a guy on second when the inning started. I kept like, not that you keep forgetting, but it's just like, oh, right. The start of every half inning is tense. And that's very, I think that's great for the game. And I think it's good for the fan. Now, there were way more people that were kind of hating on the rule than I expected on Tuesday when the Red Sox.
Really?
I'm basing this off of the Twitter mentions. There are a lot of people, oh, this isn't baseball. This isn't, you know, a lot of baseball purists don't love it because technically, you know, you didn't do anything to earn that guy on second. But I've come around to love it. I really do enjoy the rule. I think it's the urgency, like you mentioned, is very important. And the strategy, there's a lot of strategy that goes into it. Yeah, I know Cora mentioned it, and I was talking about this with Pat. Cora mentioned, we don't care about the guy at second, all right? We care about the guy at the plate. Now, if the pitchers have that mentality, I think it makes it a little easier. Even though you could ask any pitcher, they're going to say, I'm worried about the guy on second. I don't want that guy to score. So they're all going to say the same thing there. But I do like that approach because with this lineup the Red Sox have, they should be able, in theory, every time to get that guy in from second. But we'll see how it goes.
Well, you just said it, strategy and urgency. I mean, those two words. Now, you've added another word to my Carl Ravitch, thank you for saving baseball, dictionary. You know, strategy and urgency.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that make this game great. This glorious game, Steve Peralt.
Especially knowing exactly what's on the line. When you know it's a tie game, this is an extra innings, all the eyes are on you, what's going to happen? You got a guy on second, the guy that probably was upset that he made the last out of the ninth inning, is now on second base trying to make up for it. We saw it with J.D. Martinez on Tuesday, right? He makes the terrible base running blunder, which I was stunned that happened, by the way. I saw it on like the out of the corner of my eye when there was a fly out to Rosarena. I was like, did he just take off? I'm pretty sure he just took off. And they show the wider angle, and he's at home plate looking back like, oh my God, there was one out. What was I doing? So in J.D.'s defense, because a lot of people were getting on him for that, myself included, he makes up for it with the game-winning, you know, RBI and whatever it was, the 11th inning, 12th inning. So I love the rule. We can talk a little more about it. I do want to get to Tim and Walpole. He's been waiting very patiently.
Yeah.
So, Tim, we are gonna get to you. How are you doing this beautiful Saturday afternoon?
Oh, good afternoon. But well, I know what Walpole is, but I'm from Lowell, not Walpole.
Okay. Hey, well, Tim from Lowell. We'll redo it. Tim from Lowell. How you doing, Tim? Hey, how you doing?
Hey, good, good. You're only off by about 45 miles, but that's not bad.
Yeah, it's close enough.
But listen, you were talking about what I wanted to talk about, Tanner Houck, and how it aggravates me that they're sending him down.
Yeah.
This kid was the best starting pitcher on the team in September. He pitched a very good first game. Bad defense cost him a couple of runs. And you know what? And Rob can testify to this because we've talked about it before. This team is not exactly known for developing pitching, and especially starting pitching. We're probably talking about, John Lester and Buchholz and Jeff Suppan are probably the last three starters that they developed. And that's a long time ago when you go back to those three. And how Red Sox would it be to send this kid down to Worcester, have him take a line drive off his knee, out 10 or 12 weeks,
knock on wood when you say that, Tim.
Listen, Steve, you mean to say they couldn't have taken Bryce, Andrees, or even Richards? They couldn't have developed a hangnail to keep this kid on the roster another 10 days just to see what happens?
I wanted Tim, thank you for the call. Thank you very much for the call. I wanted Tanner Houck to stay up here just as much as the next guy. But, Rob, my question to you, because a lot of people are upset about the Houck news. I am as well. I mean, Heim has answered, I think, more Houck questions than anyone else on the roster. Or not on the roster, because Houck's in Worcester. What are your opinions of this situation? Because it's a very interesting one. The more you dive into it, the more you realize he's not, it's not his fault, but he's kind of the odd man out. He can't, there's nowhere in this rotation where they're going to have him, right? And he doesn't want to be in the bullpen.
And listen, it's not about like, oh my goodness, you have these unbelievable five starters and this guy, you're holding him down and because you have these unbelievable five starters. You have good enough five starters, which you have to give them a chance. You have to give them a chance. And all we know, the reality of a baseball season isn't the first week. It's the second month. It's the third month. Heck, like I saw, I just said heck.
I know. I am such
a nice gentleman. I was looking up one of the stats, which maybe we'll bring up on the pregame show, but we talk about JD Martinez's hot start, and like nobody has had this many RBIs this early on since Shea Hillebrand in 2003.
I met him at D'Angelo's. I love Shea.
A big friend of the animals. Yeah. So why I remember that was because it's the same dynamic. Like a lot of the stuff that we remember in April, we forget as the season goes on. Shea Hillebrand was traded for Young Kim a month and a half later.
Yeah.
And my point is that there's a lot of season to go here, and you just do not want to be left short. And it's okay. It is okay. That should be another thing. That should be another slogan. It's okay.
It's okay, everybody. Don't worry. But Rob, right now, though, like, see, I have a hard time with this because you can't possibly tell me that the five starters the Red Sox have right now.
No, I'm not going to tell you that.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm saying, like, you in general. Like, and no one can tell me that there's five better starters. But I also understand that, obviously, Houck has options, and he's in a position where they can afford to put him in Worcester right now. But if you're a person that desperately wants Tanner Houck on this team, the only thing you can say is to have him in the bullpen, right? Like, what else can you say?
Yeah, but I definitely don't have a problem with that. You don't bounce him around.
But there's nowhere. He's a starter. He came on this program, and he said he wants to be a starter.
And that's where his value is going to be for this season.
And there's nowhere to put him right now.
No, I understand that. Exactly. If you get to August of September and you want to do the whole, like, when Papelbon got called up, he got put in the bullpen, even though he was a starter, like, anything like that, that's fine. But Steve, you know as well as I do, we talk about overreactions. We're back on after the game tomorrow. And no matter what happens in the game tomorrow, if Garrett Richards is not good tonight, then we can just say, okay, Tanner Houck, put your order on the table, step aside, and let the phone lines roll.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
Yeah, even though it's like, realistically, let's play this out realistically. Garrett Richards, hypothetically, is terrible tonight. Everybody, every Red Sox fan, especially, who is it there, Tim from Lowell, is going to say, this guy's a bum. I knew he was going to be a bum. Tanner Houck should be coming up and filling his spot. It's not as easy as that. That's not how it's going to go. You know, what are you just going to, you're going to bench Richards and have Houck come up, like, or make up an injury or something? That's not going to happen, right? So if he has a terrible start tonight, it's really unfortunate for Cora and Heim, because then they're going to have to keep answering these questions. That's one thing. Tanner Houck, like we mentioned earlier in the show, is watching very closely. I can promise you, if he's not playing, he's watching every start. And he's staring at you through his television.
And I guarantee you, he's staring at the television wearing his Salem Red Sox Jurassic Park Red
Sox
t-shirt.
I know. So they had a shot of Houck when he was in extra innings on Tuesday, and he's got an intimidating stare. I mean, he has a pretty intimidating presence on the mound.
That's the weird thing. It's like he's all tatted up. He's sort of like,
and he's got the low brim on the hat. It's kind of low down.
And you won't meet a nicer guy.
He hopped on. I hadn't really heard him talk that much, and then we had him on this show, and I was like, wow, what a nice man. I expected him to be a little more like edgy or something. I don't know.
2021 Red Sox. We're the nicest guys.
What a nice man.
We're a bunch of nice men. All right. We have one more segment before the pregame show. I think I want to use it to have you get off your chest some words about Trevor Bauer.
Yes, I would love to.
But first, we got to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Time now for the live BP baseball show.
Ball, point, ball, net, net, ball, net.
Done. With Rob Bradford and Steve Peralt.
Throw a bowler to the stick man.
More baseball talk now.
We have some pillows. We have some pillows on the dirt.
Bradford and Peralt on WEEI.
Hi, this is Rob Bradford along with Steve Peralt, Live BP Show. Last segment before we go into the second version of the Live BP Show, the Red Sox pregame show on the Shaw's and Star Market, WEI Red Sox Radio Network. History is going to be made. A baseball show becoming the pregame show. Seamless transition, I'm sure. Right, Steve? Correct?
Absolutely. And okay. As always, shout out to DJ Bridget coming back with little Drake.
The ones and the twos.
Little Drake on a Saturday. Never heard anybody. Yeah. Love that.
All right. So I feel like since we have one last segment to go, we can do parting shots.
Yes.
Parting shots.
Let's make sure that we never say it like that ever again.
All right. I want your parting shot to be Trevor Bauer. I'm going to give you plenty of time to do that. So my parting shot will be the Red Sox are the best team in the American League East. There you go.
That was I was ready for like more talk there. All right.
No, that's it. Chris Archer hurt today.
Yes, saw that. Yeah.
I watched this team against the Rays and I said the Red Sox are probably a better team overall without the Blake Snells and the Charlie Mortons of the world. The Yankees, I think, are overrated and they're sort of are a little bit of a cluster right now, right? Correct?
Yeah, if you're a Yankee fan, like what are you sticking your chest out about?
Not good defensively.
Garrett Cole and then Judge is hurt all the time.
And by the way, like I said it early in the show, like, this is the whole Garrett Whitlock and Adam Ottavino for nothing conversation.
It's a big deal. It's becoming a bigger deal as the season goes on. Like, obviously, we haven't seen much of Ottavino, but the Whitlock story is, to me, like, the biggest story with this team so far. I might be exaggerating a little bit, but
no,
considering he's a Rule 5 guy, and he's out there putting up numbers that, you know, normal studs out of the bullpen aren't doing. Or again, we're seven games in the season, whatever.
Yeah,
but this is what we have to go off of.
But he is the one guy where we saw in spring training and we're like, wow, you know, you see a guy and like he's good.
And
like,
how good, it's uplifting that transitioned into the regular season. I mean, it obviously hasn't for Bobby Dalbec yet, so we'll see how that goes.
But and the thing about Whitlock is that, you know, I did a story on him a couple days ago about, you know, how they found him, how you get the Rule 5 guy, which by the way, I learned a lot about the Rule 5 whole thing that you can actually look at medical. You're allowed to get medicals for three guys. You have to designate three guys and say, we get medicals for them. Obviously, they picked him. But one of the things that Gus Quattlebaum, the director of pro scouting for the Red Sox, said is like, we knew if we got him that he would be almost right there with Mata as our top pitching prospect. Like,
that's a lot of confidence considering.
Well, people don't view it that way, though. People never viewed it that way with like a Rule 5. But that's when we talk about developing pitchers. If you can get a top pitching prospect for nothing, then there you go.
Especially with how much he's doing this early. People need to acknowledge, and I think they are-ish, that this is insane that they're getting that much production out of him this early already. Like, this is pretty wild that he's just seamlessly become one of your most important pieces. Forget, like, in the bullpen, one of your most important pieces on the team. And that's ridiculous. I don't even know what the comparison would be for the Red Sox. But
like I said, like I tweeted, he is going to be in the starting rotation next year, and he's going.
I liked
to be
that,
good.
By the way. It was a nice little bold prediction action going on there. Trevor Bauer stinks. How much time do I have?
Excellent segue. Hold on. You have approximately 7 minutes for your Trevor Bauer.
Okay,
take.
I don't think I'm going to need that long. But obviously, the story comes out from Ken Rosenthal on, I believe it was Thursday. Multiple suspicious baseballs from Dodgers' Trevor Bauer sent to Major League Baseball for inspection. Now, the key paragraph, because everyone knows that I don't love reading, but the key paragraph that I did read, Rob Bradford, it, very clearly, I can't even read. The umpires in Bauer's start against the Oakland Athletics on Wednesday collected multiple balls he threw during the game, according to Major League sources. The balls had visible markings and were sticky. They were sticky. And were sent to the league offices for further inspection, the sources said. Now, Ken Rosenthal has been doing this for a long time. Ken Rosenthal is very well respected in the baseball world and the baseball media world. Trevor Bauer goes on to tweet, LOL, always fun reading desperate and misleading clickbait headlines from national gossip bloggers. To translate fake journalist speak for y'all, he puts in quotes, it's unclear whether... And another quote, I can't be bothered to look into this because wonder where the articles about balls from every other pitcher being taken out of play in literally every other game this season are. And he just goes on to just blab about meaningless stuff and a very desperate attempt to try to get some people back on his side, even though he's very clearly altering the baseballs. Now, Trevor Bauer is somebody that we all know was ripping the Astros, specifically, I believe, Garrett Cole, for upping his spin rate to ridiculous levels. when he was in Houston and doing the whole, you know, I'm sure he did some vlog on it and blabbing about how ridiculous it is that, like, the rules say you can't do it, but a lot of guys are using pine tar to up their spin rate. Now, I've never hated a pitcher using pine tar for control with the baseball. Now, if you're going to a level where they're saying they had multiple baseballs that were very sticky and had visible markings on them, do not come to me and say, oh, but what about the other pitchers? There's other guys that had the substance. Not me. Trevor Bauer is such a clown. I hate him so much. I used to hate Marcus Stroman the most because he would go out of his way to have these forced celebrations and then rush to Twitter to be like, y'all don't mind when they do bat flips, but I can't, like, flip off the opposing dugout. Like, he would go way out of his way to be obnoxious to try to approve a point. It didn't feel natural. Everything with Trevor Bauer is forced. It does not feel natural, and I'm so done with it, Rob. I can't do it. This article came out. I got very excited because I was like, you know what? His ball moves a ridiculous amount. I would not be stunned one iota if he has pine tar, if he has substances he's using to help those pitches. And coming from a guy that went out of his way to criticize other pitchers for enhancing their pitches, he is now doing the exact same thing. You also can't tell me he wasn't doing that last year. He obviously was in Cincinnati as he goes on to win the Cy Young. So Trevor Bauer's a clown. I'm done with this whole thing. And it's not going anywhere, right? Like, I think we're going to look back at this as like, oh, remember that like year or two where like we were all looking at what Bauer said and he was kind of like going off the rails every 2 seconds and was clapping back at Manfred because he knew it would get his retweets. Like, that's what he's doing right now. And it's tired. To use one of my favorite humans, Dennis Eckersley, to use one of his phrases, this whole shtick is tired and I've had enough. So that's my spiel.
That was an excellent spiel. Excellent job. And so, much like you do with all of our excellent interviews, you break them down. I will break down your spiel right now. And I think you are very, very correct in having the instincts to be upset at Trevor Bauer and not liking him, because he made some big mistakes here. One of the mistakes was, like you said, with Rosenthal. You can't call him a gossip blogger.
Ken Rosenthal is at the top, and even
people who maybe don't like Ken Rosenthal for whatever reason, I don't know why you wouldn't, but like, no one would call him a gossip blogger.
Doesn't he seem in this baseball media world to be one of the more liked guys, Ken Rosenthal?
Yeah, because, you know, I don't think he doesn't give his opinion a lot, and
he reports news.
He reports news that you want to be reported.
Now, I wish he didn't report the A-Rod news during the 07 clincher, but that's besides the point.
But was he the one who did that?
Yeah, he did. They went to Ken Rosenthal in the eighth inning as the Red Sox. Anyway.
All right, so another big mistake that Trevor Bauer made here was, he's right. He's right in the sense of, why aren't people more identifying or doing stories on these other guys who are having balls taken out of play? But he's wrong, because we know why they aren't. Because Trevor Bauer chose to be the guy who put himself out there more than anybody, who chose to get on the soapbox and proclaim to the world, I don't cheat. All the cheaters are evil human beings. All of that. He was the guy who chose to be that guy. So when you do that, then you are going to be put in the crosshairs more than anyone. And by the way, I don't doubt that everyone's still cheating. And did you see the video of John Means?
I didn't catch it.
I apologize to whoever tweeted this out. But somebody had John Means just quickly swiping his fingers along the glove. And that's all it is. That's all it is. A little touch of pine tar in your glove. You quickly swipe it. There's no way the umpire could ever see it. And I'm sure there's a ton of guys doing that. But Trevor Bauer, I agree with you, Steve. You cannot do those two things. You cannot call Ken Rosenthal a gossip blogger, and you just can't be this guy saying, how dare you identify me above everybody else.
Especially when you call that much attention to yourself over the course of the year. He's doing all these vlogs, and he wants everyone to look at me. He's so obnoxious with everything he does. But then the second someone comes knocking on your door like, hey, just so you know, here I am, Ken Rosenthal, very well-respected national journalist, not blogger. I have found out that they are investigating your baseballs. Of course he's going to write that story. You just want a Cy Young. Like, that is a story.
So sorry, Trevor, but when you want all the attention and you finally get it, with it is going to come stuff like this if you're doctoring the baseballs. That's just how it works.
Exactly. All right. I'm glad you got that off your chest.
Oh, I feel great.
Excellent rant. Yeah. The only thing that we didn't get to is the uniforms, but you know what? That's what the pregame show is.
Yes,
for.
I can't wait.
I think that we can talk about that with the Will Fleming segment live from Fenway Park with Will Fleming. There's a lot going on with this pregame show. It is a brand new pregame show and a brand new era of Live BP doing the pregame show. I don't know if you're nervous, excited. What's your feeling, Steve,
about I'm excited, diving into this? But per everything, I always like knowing what the structure is, so going to get used to that today.
Okay. All right. Well, Bridget, excellent job. Are you still have the adrenaline rush from yesterday, Bridget?
From UMass?
From no, Greg Hill Show.
No, from the Greg Hill Show.
Oh, well, I was thinking UMass, but no, I don't think so.
Okay, well, all right.
She's ready for UMass. She's ready for
go
Minutemen.
As long as you have somewhere else.
As long as you. Anyone else I should thank? Steve Peral, I'm going to thank you at the end of the pregame show because it's going to be a wild ride, this pregame show.
All the callers, Jeff Gordon. And Coop specifically, obviously.
Oh, Jeff, Coop, thanks. You know, part of the family.
Yes.
All right, Red Sox Radio Network pregame show, usually known as the Mutt Happy Hour, but today it is the Live BP pregame show. It is coming up. Joe and Will with a call, but first, the pregame show right after this.